Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Late last night, Cyril Ramaphosa announced that a government of national unity is the preferred option for us going forward following our elections. 2 weeks ago, I was joined by Daniel Silk, political and economic commentator, about what we could expect, and I have to say he was 100% correct. He's my guest again today to talk about what a government of national unity might look like. Daniel, welcome, and thanks so much for joining me.
Well, lovely to be back with you, Charisse. Looking forward to the chat.
Daniel, last time you said we would be going for our brands, and I think that voting for our usual brands, I think you were spot on.
Many people are saying this was a vote for change and that it was a watershed in South Africa. In some respects, it absolutely is. In other respect, not so much, frankly, because some of the support levels for some of the parties didn't really change. And in fact, ultimately, when you look at the broad results for this election, this wasn't an election where South Africans woke up the next morning or at least went to vote and wanted a new sort of liberal view of the world. They didn't have a road to Damascus moment where they believed in individual freedoms and the privatization of state-owned enterprises. That wasn't the case. I mean, the big movement in this election really was, 14-15% of ANC voters across to Jacob Zuma's MK party. That was the big movement. The DA support levels remained relatively static in terms of their overall support, although they do come out of this vote somewhat stronger just by virtue of the fact that the ANC has weakened. And the smaller parties really didn't feature to any substantive amount at all. And the EFF treaded water, losing a little bit of support. So that's my 1 minute summation of the result.
Which is interesting, because if the MK hadn't been formed, the ANC would have got the majority or not.
If MK had not been formed, difficult to say what would have been, I must tell you. But if MK had not been formed, it's possible that the voter turnout, which was already disappointingly low, would have been even lower, because many of those MK voters were particularly frustrated with the ANC. They might have been Zulu speakers predominantly, so there was a identity factor or a Zulu factor in their vote. And had they been disaffected or disenchanted enough with Ramaphosa, as they clearly were because they voted against him, they might just have stayed away from the polls, as it happens. So I think that would have been the case. But in theory, if you put that MK vote, which came from previous ANC supporters, more or less, together with the ANC vote, you still get about 55-56% of the electorate supporting the family of the ANC. And you could argue that the EFF, as estranged as they've been from the family of the ANC, might just be sort of the youth movement of the ANC that's also in exile. So add it all up and you get to the Liberation family still being relatively intact, but divorced or split into three formations.
And are we going to, I think the big question everybody's asking with a government of national unity, are we going to see a tunadering of the ANC liberation movement, or what can we expect? What does a government of national unity actually mean?
Well, I think it's the million-dollar question at the moment, simply because it was clear that the ANC would never be able to sell a coalition agreement between itself and the DA. This would have run against 30 years of the vilification of the DA. Also, I think the ANC understood that it couldn't proceed with a formal coalition agreement with the EFF, or frankly with MK, or whatever that means. So I think the way out, of course, the compromise, which is a typical policy sort of a direction from Ramaphosa, who's spent the last 6-7 years of his presidency compromising between various factions, was to look at a government of national unity, which ultimately dilutes the importance of the DA within the broader gathering of political parties that in theory are going to be invited to join this government of national unity. Now, what we don't know, all we know is that that is the course that the ANC wishes to pursue, a government of national unity. What we don't know is what are the nuts and bolts of that GNU, to use this resurrected acronym that we used to have back in 1994. And you remember, we had a government of national unity in South Africa after the first democratic election. The National Party got the deputy president position, and there was a second deputy presidential position given to Mangosuthu Buthelezi from the IFP. So the three biggest parties, Mandela obviously occupying the presidency, were afforded those honors. Now, is this government of national unity that's proposed going to look the same? Is there potential, therefore, for two deputy presidents from, let us say, the DA and whatever the third biggest party participating? If it's not MK, it would be the EFF. Is that going to be on offer? Maybe, maybe not. And we also don't know whether the government of national unity will mean there'll be a dispersal of positions of cabinet ministers in proportion to other party strengths alongside the ANC, or whether there'll be parliamentary positions, chairpersonships of standing committees, key office bearers proportioned out again to other political parties. We actually don't know. So that's the first unknown of the announcement last night. And the second unknown, and this is the real big unknown to me, is a government of national unity is certainly a mechanism to take South Africa forward. I mean, we have to move forward. We've got less than 2 weeks to elect a president. We need stability and we need continuity in governance. That's fine. And a government of national unity provides that. But ultimately, the issue to me is, what is the agenda of a government of national unity? What is the policy agenda to kickstart South Africa out of the malaise that it's in? And is the agenda going to be dominated by the ANC, the EFF, the Patriotic Alliance, sort of what I would call center or center leftist political parties? Or will, for example, if the DA, and it's an if the DA participates, will the DA have a role amidst, of course, other parties that are hardly aligned to the more centrist philosophies of the DA? And that policy agenda, I'm afraid, I don't know. And the DA clearly would be looking for some sort of intermediate guarantee, I suppose, that aspects of what the DA wants will be on the agenda, will be up for discussion if they are to join a government of national unity. So all I've said to you is that we don't know. But that's the framework in which we're going to negotiate, at least initially. That framework may mutate over the course of the next week. It may break down. There's no guarantees in this process.
Daniel, yesterday was, I think, probably quite a tense day for South Africans, probably for the ANC as well, based on, you know, the fact that they were in meetings the entire day, that the president only spoke at 10 o'clock, that the ANC itself has come out, you know, with COSATU going against a coalition. Is the fact that the decision has been taken for a government of national unity to, is that a good first step? Are we at least heading in the right direction? Well, could there have been another option that would have been worse?
Well, yes. As I always say, it can always get worse. People always say it can't get worse. Yes, it can always get worse. And of course, the other option would have been for the ANC to say, look, we want and this is in sort of ANC speak, we want to cobble together a progressive coalition of political parties that share our particular values. And that would have meant a much more narrowly defined ANC, EFF, perhaps Patriotic Alliance, even perhaps MK, if they were amenable coalition, which would exclude any input then from centrist or moderate political parties like the DA. That would have been the worst option. So as I said, this was the compromise option. It to some degree will pacify the markets for the moment and watch the rand and the value of the rand, because the value of the rand is the going to really, you know, you don't have to sort of think about what the politicians are saying behind closed doors. Always watch that value of the rand, because that will reflect whether the markets have confidence in the arrangement that is being discussed. Markets were pretty flat after the announcement of this GNU option. Markets didn't react that favorably. They didn't react negatively because of the uncertainty that I've spoken to you about. So it opens the window for a broader discussion about policy shifts in South Africa. And that's the positive. It opens the window for different political philosophies to be aired at a national level, and that the monopoly of power that we had in South Africa prior to last week has shifted now to a broader family discussion. But the difficulty here will be whether the DA, as the major centrist party, the outlier in a sense, away from the ANC and the EFF, whether the DA sees that its role will actually bear practical fruit in terms of the DA's philosophies. And I think this is a deep discussion that the DA will have to see whether they will be included or whether they will include themselves in a government of national unity. So there's a lot of dust to settle here.
There's a lot of dust to settle. It's a lot of uncertainty. And, you know, if the markets are feeling a little bit insecure, I imagine all South Africans are to a greater or lesser extent. Daniel, what every party has to make a decision, I imagine, internally about what they're going to do. And I imagine every party is internally divided about what is best for it. And we only have a short period of time. There hasn't been violence. Everybody is kind of proud of the fact that there was no violence during the elections. Do you think this turmoil could result in violence in the next 2 weeks, especially KwaZulu-Natal?
Look, I'm always a cautious person when it comes to analysis, and I'm particularly cautious about, you know, the potential of this arrangement to actually work and to have longevity for 5 years. By the way, you know, from politics in other parts of the world, particularly in Israel, where unity governments, coalition governments don't always last the full course, and there's a danger here that this can happen in South Africa. No, I think for the moment, the interests of all the political parties, including MK, as distance as they seem from the constitutional order, given their utterances about the legitimacy of the election. It's in the interests of everyone, I think, to maintain and to manage a degree of stability over this particular period. I don't have a fear that there will be a mass unrest. I think the destabilization that perhaps can occur is more likely to occur around governance in KwaZulu-Natal. And there, I think that province is a particular problem across many different measurements. And particularly, I might add, at local government level. Remember that we've had this election now, but in KwaZulu-Natal, all of those local authorities, city councils in major towns, in Durban, eThekwini, and in the smaller towns, they aren't elected. Those councillors were elected in the previous election, which skewed more towards the ANC. Suddenly, those councillors now see that the ANC has largely collapsed in KZN. MK is on the rise. Those councillors are going to be tempted to jump ship, cross the floor. And as a result, a fair amount of administrative chaos can occur in KZN as opposed to disruption on the streets. And I think we have to just, you know, put out that warning about that bureaucratic chaos or administrative chaos that can result in that province.
Does a government of national unity necessarily involve every single party? I mean, no,
it doesn't. The invitation, as one would gather from Ramaphosa, goes out to all the parties, although he did make some provisos. He also mentioned those parties that uphold the constitution or the values of the constitution. He also mentioned that, I think, in his address, which implies that, you know, they would be more skeptical of Jacob Zuma, for that matter. But, you know, every party will get a broad invitation to join. There will be some parties that exclude themselves from sitting at the same table as the ANC. And one would imagine that for Herman Mashaba's Action South Africa party, Mashaba already just yesterday withdrew formally from what was left of the multi-party charter, said he won't work with the ANC in any way or form. One would assume that he will remain outside of a government of national unity. The danger for parties is they get, if the government of national unity, if the agenda of that government of national unity or the performance of that government of national unity is skewed against your particular views and doesn't assist South Africa in rebuilding, you can be tainted, of course, by your association with a GNU. And that's another problem for parties to assess: how long they spend in the GNU, at what point they become disaffected. Is there an exit strategy for them? If they no longer want to be part of it, what damage would that do to their brand? These are many issues that have to be threshed out by parties that are invited, by most of the parties that are invited to join.
What are the likelihood of us actually going to another election based on all the scenarios that you painted?
Well, I think there's a much higher likelihood than we've ever had. I mean, we've never had a question mark about the term of office of our parliament. We've always assumed there's a five-year period. This has changed as a result of this election. I mean, when the leading party only has 40%, and when you've got a fairly fractious composition of different political parties, who are going to really find it very difficult to agree on these fundamental philosophical and ideological issues that divide them. It's certainly more probable. You know, you can ask me what kind of level of probability is there, but it's certainly more probable that we may well need to re-vote during the next 5 years if this government of national unity collapses. It doesn't have the ANC is kind of a partial anchor tenant, if you want to use that retail term, but it's not an anchor tenant with an overwhelming volume of support. And the ANC can also suffer further decline in the intervening period. It's not as though this election arrests the decline of the ANC. They can indeed have even further internal and popular support ructions in the next while. So don't hold your breath that whatever arrangement we have is going to last for 5 years.
You know, I think, do you think we would have to go to a re-election even before a government of unity is established? And then do you kind of start thinking about Israel and having a sense of, oh my gosh, we could be doing this every 6 months?
Yeah, look, we have moved into this, you know, more unstable coalition unity sort of style of politics that we, our analysts, we always felt we would be moving into this particular framework. Look, our constitution wasn't really designed to allow sufficient time for the deliberations to cement a kind of formation of governance. We've only got 14 days from the declaration of the election. So we have to have a parliamentary sitting, as I understand it, by about the 17th of June, more or less, to make the first critical election, which is the speaker and the president. That's the first order of business. You can't. If there can be no agreement on that, I mean, if all the parties demand too much on their own without compromise in terms of this broader potential government of national unity, you could have a breakdown even before that period. But I think that there will be tremendous pressure on all parties to provide a veneer of stability, which means that there'll be an agreement at a very elite level in terms of those top positions that are going to be appointed. Some of the nuts and bolts, I'm afraid, are only going to come in the following weeks, but we'll get the ball rolling. And I don't think you're going to have to go and vote in the next short while anyway.
Although I must say, I would make different choices to the ones I did if I had to vote again, without giving too much away, without giving anything away, actually.
Well, you know, it's an interesting point because, you know, the election result and how parties have behaved even after the election can shift opinion, and voters who voted during the election for a particular in a particular direction can feel as though their vote could have been better used elsewhere, given what's happened afterwards. I fully understand what you say. So another vote in itself can swing results or skew results even more differently. And I'm not assuming that you voted for MK, but in the case of KwaZulu-Natal, the strength that MK showed can be a spur to others who might have voted ANC to say, well, actually, they did very well. They weren't just a small little player. Enough people voted for them. Let's add our voice to their strength. So I take your point that a second election would add even more fluidity into this debate.
Daniel, in our last remaining minutes, how optimistic are you that all our political parties are putting the country at the forefront of the negotiations and not their own interests?
Yeah, I think it's difficult. It's a difficult question to answer because these political parties are ideologically very divided, and their modus operandi in terms of governance also differs substantially. So whether they are really honest with themselves, whether they're honest with themselves that they can see beyond their noses, is a difficult one to analyze. I think there will be a veneer of unity that could very well be presented, but that veneer might be, you know, pretty skin deep, as the old cliche goes. And that's why, you know, I'm a little bit more sort of cautious in terms of the longevity of any kind of arrangement that we move into. Self-interest may well become over time a more important factor for some of the players in this new environment in which we're in.
So does that mean you'll come back on my show again in 2 weeks' time and we can analyze some more?
I suspect I'll have to.
Thank you so much. I can't wait for that discussion. It's so exciting. So it's reassuring to have someone to hold our hand metaphorically and walk us through this and give us hope. Daniel, thank you so much for joining me. That was Daniel Silk, political and economic analyst, looking at what's going to happen next.